appears in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, over a still image of a castle sitting amid a forested valley, a title reads, Overture. Logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear over a black background. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Cinerama present a George Pal production. Now, in a grassy field, a soldier lights a large cannon. Thick smoke from the cannon blast fills the air. Dirt and smoke fly up from the ground as explosions knock two soldiers off their feet. An army marches forward through the smoke, brandishing bayoneted rifles. Several soldiers play drums that hang at their waists as another blows a bugle.
Early in the 1800s, the fearful sounds of war once again shook the heart of Europe.
Three long lines of infantry in full battle regalia shoot their rifles, filling the air with white puffs of smoke.
Not far from the field of battle, there was another sound, soft and gentle. Yet it has echoed down the years to be heard long after the guns were stilled and the battles forgotten. If you listen closely, you can hear it now.
In a large library, two men sit at desks. Yellow titles appear. The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm. A title appears above the dark-haired man. Starring Lawrence Harvey as Wilhelm Grimm. Another appears above the blonde man, and Carl Boehm as Jacob Grimm. More titles: Claire Bloom, Walter Slezak, Barbara Eden, Oscar Homolka, Arnold Stagg, Martita Hunt, Betty Gard, Brian Russell, Ian Wolfe, Tammy Merrihue, Cheerio Meredith, Walter Rilla, the townspeople of Rotenburg, Dinkelsbühl, and Rhine River Valley, the Regensburg Domspatzen Choir. A stack of yellowing pages appears. The top page reads, The Dancing Princess. The pages slide away one at a time, revealing others. starring Yvette Nimier and Russ Tamblyn, Jim Backus, Beulah Bondi, Clinton Sundberg, The Cobbler and the Elves, starring Lawrence Harvey and the Puppetoons, Walter Brook, Sandra Gale Betton, Robert Folk, The Singing Bone, starring Terry Thomas and Buddy Hackett, Otto Kruger, Robert Crawford Jr., Sidney Smith. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH. Described by Carrie Danahy and Paula Broussard. Read by Miles Neff. Major funding provided by the U.S. Department of Education. For more about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. More titles. Music score by Lee Harleen. The songs, Dancing Princess, Aum, Christmas Land, D-R-A-G-O-N, Dragon. Words and music by Bob Merrill. Copyright 1962. Screenplay by David P. Harmon, Charles Beaumont, and William Roberts. Screen story by David P. Harmon. Based on Die Brüder Grimm by Dr. Hermann Gerstner. Fairy Tales directed by George Pal. Directed by Henry Levin. Now, in the library, the two brothers write with quill pens. An old man sneaks up behind the dark-haired Wilhelm. The old man signals across the room for Jacob to be quiet, then leans in close behind Wilhelm.
Well, Grimm, how goes the work today?
Mr. Gruber, forgive me, I didn't know you were here.
Does my presence disturb you? Your hands are trembling.
My brother has not been feeling well, Mr. Gruber. His health is really not...
And still he continues to work. What heroic devotion to duty.
It's nothing.
On the contrary, Grimm. On the contrary, His Grace, the Duke, would be most grateful and find ways to show it. May I examine the fruits of your labor?
But it isn't complete.
Would you rather wait until the entire manuscript...
No. No.
Gruber chooses a page at random from Wilhelm's desk. As he reads it, the brothers cover their faces.
And as he fell, he ceased to be a frog and turned into a prince with beautiful, kind eyes. And where does this event occur in the Duke's family history,
Well, I heard this little story, and while it was fresh in my mind, I thought I'd borrow just a few minutes.
Borrowed. You call it borrowing, do you?
He tears the page.
Stealing! You are stealing from the Duke, who is paying you to write his family history. When you steal from the Duke, you are committing a crime for which he could put you behind bars like any other thief.
He throws the pieces away.
Need I say more, gentlemen?
As Gruber marches out of the library, Wilhelm's younger brother folds his arms across his chest. Wilhelm rushes to the wastebasket and sifts through the discarded papers. Later, the brothers walk down a cobblestone street lined with quaint buildings.
Don't be angry, Jacob. Anger poisons the mind and sours the stomach.
Wilhelm, these are perilous times. Work is hard to find and money is scarce.
I swear, word of honor, I'm a reformed man.
You have a responsibility, your wife, your children.
You're right, absolutely. You see, I heard this wonderful, wonderful story from the old flower vendor.
I don't want to hear it.
About this beautiful young princess playing with a golden ball. The ball falls into the well, and she thinks it's lost. When suddenly, a frog offers to fetch it up for her, but only if she'll invite the frog to dinner, and then...
As the brothers walk on, two garishly dressed ladies watch them.
Off the clouds again.
The poor moonstruck ninny.
The whole world on fire, and he can't even smell the smoke.
Wilhelm approaches.
Forgive me, ladies, but I do smell the smoke and the gunpowder. True, the whole world is at war. Blood is flowing everywhere.
Townsfolk Wilhelm, gather.
Real blood, ladies. Not dragon's blood, which isn't harmful, nor witch's brew, which can turn an old hag into a beautiful young princess. That is my world, dear ladies. If you prefer yours, I beg you keep it, with my fond blessings and a cordial good day.
I honestly believe his mind is going.
Gone, my dear, never to return.
That was the last gasp from the old Wilhelm. Now on, you'll see. Jacob Grimm.
A stocky man motions to them.
You see what he wants. I'll go and buy the bread.
All right, but hurry. We're late already.
Jacob!
An old flower vendor approaches Wilhelm.
Mr. Grimm, don't you want to buy a rose?
No, thank you.
I have another one for you, Mr. Grimm. A darling story.
No,
No more stories.
About the funny little man who spins gold out of straw.
Spins gold out of straw?
He smiles, then frowns.
No. No, no.
Wilhelm walks away, then turns back to the old woman and gives her a coin for a rose.
How does it go?
A pretty girl is locked in the king's castle. Spin this straw into gold, he says, or you will die. Such a sweet story.
Meanwhile, the stocky man adjusts Jacob's coat.
That's a little better. Now, if you could possibly manage to look a little less gloom, yeah?
If you called me to criticize my appearance...
No, my friend Jacob, no. Your gloominess is only a symptom. Now the diagnosis. Too much work, no pleasure, too many hours alone.
Look, I feel fine.
Don't be absurd. Symptom, diagnosis, and now the cure.
They step into a bookshop.
I must...
Miss Greta Heinrich, may I present Mr. Jacob Grimm?
A blonde woman faces them.
I don't believe it. A man so young? Why, I saw you on the street, and it never entered my mind that you could be Jacob Grimm, the author of all these marvelous works.
Well, I... That is not precisely true. I collaborate with my brother.
Ah, the married brother, yes.
You will be thrilled to know that Miss Heinrich has bought one of your books. One that you wrote all by yourself.
I can't wait to read it.
Jacob looks at the book in her hands.
Legal Antiquities?
A marvelous choice. Old laws are so much nicer than new ones, sir. I told Miss Heinrich, if she waited, the author would write something in the book.
Yes, but... What shall I write?
Anything.
The stocky man dips a quill.
Respectfully.
He pulls a stool out for Jacob.
Sincerely.
He hands him the quill.
Affectionately.
Jacob eyes him, then turns to Greta.
Would it be all right if I just sign my name?
Oh, of course. It's not the words, but the thought that counts.
Miss Heinrich is visiting from Berlin with her aunt. Doesn't know a soul in town.
There are many young people here. She won't be lonely.
The stocky man shakes his head. Jacob blows drying powder from his signature and hands the book to Greta.
Well, thank you, Mr. Grimm. You're very kind.
Not at all.
Wilhelm enters the store.
Jacob! Jacob, look, I want to talk to you.
My brother Wilhelm, Miss Greta Heinrich.
Delighted.
Mr. Grimm.
Wilhelm.
Stossel.
I do hope we'll see each other again.
It's inevitable.
Oh, really?
In such a small town, one's always seeing everyone else.
Oh, yes, of course. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Heinrich.
The stocky shopkeeper shows her out.
Thanks very much for coming in.
Good day, Mr. Stossel.
Stossel looks at Jacob.
Well, what's the matter?
Your muttonhead brother. I introduce him to a charming girl who goes out of her way to buy one of his dull books.
To you, they may be dull.
To everyone. Look here. German Grammar, Volume 1. German Grammar, Volume 2. Analysis of German Grammar. As a good friend, I give them space. As a better friend, I say to you, write books people will buy. Write about girls.
Jacob holds his hand waist high.
Oh, but you mean...
No, I mean about...
Stossel mimes a woman's curves.
But what do I know about girls?
Nothing. About everything that's important, you know nothing.
Stossel, don't you dare talk to my brother like that. Jacob is the wisest, most kind, most generous.
Where is the bread?
The bread.
Wilhelm holds a bouquet of roses.
Jacob, I wanted to talk to you about that.
So you bought another story from that villainous flower vendor. And the bread money's gone.
Just this once. If you will lend me some money, I promise... Well, I swear. Word
of honor, never again.
Jacob smiles, reaches into his coat, and hands his brother a coin.
You see? He's a prince among men.
Wilhelm rushes out.
He's a fool.
Stossel watches from the stoop.
Next to you, the biggest fool in the world.
He faces Jacob.
But it's not too late to change. For me, for your dearest friend, please, write about girls.
Jacob walks away.
Jacob, write about girls.
A plump woman steps past him. Later on a street, Wilhelm helps a little girl pull a rope tied to a tall water pump. Jacob watches as the girl goes up and down with each yank.
We are all ready. 7 minutes late. I hope you have an explanation.
Have you ever known me when I haven't had an explanation? Look, the reason we're late...
They move on.
Because we stopped to buy our roses.
We stopped? Our roses?
After all, you paid for them. Besides, you stopped to force your attentions on a pretty girl.
Jacob stops him.
I paid for the bread.
Oh, no, I insist.
You take half the credit for the roses and half the blame for being late.
As they enter a house, a little boy and girl hurry downstairs.
Come on in! Come on! Come on!
They rush into Wilhelm's arms and knock him over.
Help! Help! Savages! Mad dogs! Help! Save me!
Wilhelm gets to his knees and tickles his children on the floor. A dachshund circles around them.
Pay dearly. I'll grind them all.
A brunette woman watches them soberly.
And you, my dear, I have other plans.
Where have you been? For one whole hour, the dinner's been kept waiting. What?
He hides the roses behind his back.
What's this, Wilhelm?
A tribute to your kind, sweet, gentle, beauteous
Where's
ma.
Where's the bread?
Bread? What bread?
Children, go and wash your hands, will you?
The children leave the room.
I gave you money for bread, instead of which you come back with... Shh. What am I to do? I don't have two children. I have... Jacob. You should know better. We've barely enough money for...
Jacob holds out the bread.
The bread?
She clutches the round loaf to her chest.
You didn't forget the bread?
No, Dorothea. He didn't forget. And don't you forget. Man does not live by bread alone.
Jacob hands her the roses.
That's a strange sentiment from you.
It's not from me. It's from the Bible.
And from Stossel's bookshop. You see, a young lady came in and bought one of his books today. Asked him to write in it. A very beautiful young lady, hey, Jacob?
I didn't notice.
Well, she obviously noticed you.
What was her name? Do I know her?
Rita Albrecht.
Rita Heinrich.
You see, that's our Jacob for you. Can't remember a face, but never forgets a name.
If dinner is ready, why don't we eat?
Oh, right away.
Dorothea smells the flowers, then turns to Wilhelm.
They're lovely.
She kisses him.
They're just lovely.
The children enter and sit at the table.
It's my turn.
It is not. It's my turn.
It was your turn yesterday.
No, it was your turn yesterday.
How can it be your turn today if it was yours yesterday?
Children... You may share the honor.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty.
Later.
Gruber, that shriveled husk. He doesn't know the meaning of the word happy. And as for our gracious patron, the noble Duke...
Someone might hear you and tell him.
Good, it might reduce his bloated ego.
Might also throw us out of this house, which he gives us rent-free. Might also put you in jail.
You're right. And so are you. The Duke doesn't want scholars, he wants toadies to sing the glories of his illustrious name so that he can be a toady to the King of Prussia. However, we need the money, so to work.
No, Jacob, I'll go to work. I'm going to make up for the borrowed time. But don't look so surprised. I'm a reformed man.
Wilhelm leans toward his wife. She takes the pipe from his mouth and he kisses her cheek.
Well, don't disturb the children.
The children would be wise not to disturb me.
As Wilhelm goes upstairs, Jacob sits by Dorothea.
What was he doing to make Gruber angry, Jacob, what was he doing?
Just being himself.
Upstairs, Wilhelm enters a dark study carrying a lit lamp and a wooden writing box. The room is lined with cluttered bookshelves. Wilhelm clears away rolls of paper on a desk and sets down the box. Wilhelm looks toward the door, then returns his attention to his work. Distracted, Wilhelm sets down his papers and walks into a dimly lit hallway. He enters a room with two beds where the blankets show the contours of two nestled figures. Wilhelm tiptoes to the first bed and pulls back the covers. A rolled-up blanket lies underneath.
Not here.
He finds the dog in the second bed.
It must be there.
The children come out from behind a curtain.
We fooled you!
Shh, now that's enough. Into bed. Come on. And to sleep instantly. Come on, come on.
They crawl into bed.
We want a story.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, Papa, just one.
No, no more stories.
No more stories? Not never?
Not ne. Not ever. You should be studying your grammar.
Not never. Why, that's atrocious grammar.
Oh, grammar's too hard.
Nothing's too hard, son, nothing. If you want it badly enough, you'll get it. Now, remember the woodsman? What he wanted was impossible, nevertheless.
What woodsman?
Well, you know, the woodsman who lived in the forest all alone.
What did he want so badly?
How did he get it?
Well, it happened that on a day, a very special day, he decided to embark on a great adventure, a journey far from the forest that was his home.
I dream of winning a princess, la 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 la.
In a forest, a handsome woodsman hops over a brook, then leans down and puckers his lips at a deer.
La 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 la, happy and gay am I.
He approaches a door in the side of a massive tree trunk that has gnarled roots.
Come in.
Inside, an old woman flips cards.
Good morning, dear gypsy. I've come to bid
me goodbye.
Who told you?
The cards. Who else would ever speak to me?
What else did they tell you?
That your purse is empty, and your heart's full to overflowing.
Good luck for you.
He spins her around.
No. Not for me, but for the king's daughter, the loveliest flower in all the land. And you hope to win his flower.
I shall try. Goodbye, Gypsy.
Woodsman, wait. I have something for you.
She opens a trunk.
No one has ever given me a word of kindness but you. When others have scoffed, you alone have smiled.
Give me one smile in return and I'll be happy.
That you shall have. And something more.
The gypsy holds up her hands as if pinching a cloth by the corners.
Hold out your hand. Hold out your hand.
He does it.
Now you see it.
She circles her hand over his.
And now you don't.
My hand.
It disappears.
Take this cloak of invisibility. It will hide you from men's greed and protect you from their envy.
Will it help me to win the princess?
That you'll never know until you try.
He takes the invisible cloak from her and wraps it around his shoulders. His body disappears.
You'll need this, too.
She hands him a half mask. He puts it under his cloak and it disappears. His head seems to float in midair as he bends down and kisses the gypsy's cheek. He pulls an invisible hood over his head and disappears completely. The gypsy watches as footprints cross the dirt floor.
Bye, gypsy.
She watches the door close.
I dream of winning a princess. Dreaming a princess is mine. La 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 la, la 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 la. Dreaming with love less than mine.
Now the woodsman enters the castle's large assembly hall. Slippers are strung like garland from the ceiling, and dozens of regally dressed men and women stand along the curtained walls. The woodsman bows to the king on his throne.
He bows very well, doesn't he?
He continues bowing.
Oh, very well indeed. Stop it. That's enough. Who are you? No, let me guess. You are a prince in disguise.
He shakes his head.
Duke? Baron? Varlet? Knave?
Your Majesty, I'm just a humble woodsman.
Oh, that's wonderful! Ah, that's marvelous! Oh, a woodsman! That means that you are accustomed to the axe!
The king points to an executioner. As the woodsman laughs along with a jester and the rest of the court, the king waves his scepter to hush the crowd. The woodsman stops laughing.
The rules.
A royal official unfurls a scroll and reads from it.
He who
discovers how my daughter
walks halls to her suppers every night
without telling me how she does it. I tell you, another pair every night. It cost me a fortune. Proceed.
He who discovers the why and wherefore
Gets half my kingdom. Oh, yes, and the princess, too. Tell him the bad part.
Whoever shall try and fail,
as all others have tried and failed, shall have his head separated from his body forevermore.
The executioner swings his axe and the woodsman gulps.
That's the good part, really. But please, my daughter's very sensitive. Promise you won't tell her?
Cross my heart and hope to die.
How delicious! How delightful!
The king grins at the woodsman.
Good luck, woodsman. But remember, don't lose your head. Ha, ha, ho!
The woodsman rubs his neck and smiles nervously at the surrounding courtiers. The king's 3-foot-tall jester runs over to the woodsman. He wears a satiny blue and yellow costume, a matching hat with 2 points that stick up like horns, and shoes that curl up at the toe. The jester flips, then scurries around the woodsman on his hands and feet. Now, in an ornate bedroom, a blonde woman in a long cape twirls in front of a mirror. Her handmaid rushes to the door, opens a peephole, and peeks out at the woodsman, who paces in the hallway.
Ooh, he is the handsomest by far. Don't you want to look, Your Highness?
Certainly not. Fetch the sleeping potion.
The princess ties a fine golden cap on her head, then exits the room. Her handmaid follows with a tray and silver goblet. In the hall, the woodsman kneels.
Good evening, woodsman. You may rise.
He stands and she holds out the goblet.
Here's some warmth for the long, cold night ahead.
The woodsman holds the goblet under his nose. His smile fades as he sniffs the steam.
Is something wrong?
Yes. Yes, I expected you to be beautiful.
Am I not?
Oh, no, princess. You're divine.
As the princess looks scoldingly at her handmaid, the woodsman dumps the goblet's contents in a potted flower. The flower yawns and falls asleep.
Well, cheers.
He pretends to drink from the goblet. He notices the drooping flower.
We certainly don't get wine like this in the forest.
Oh, I'm sure you don't. Well, good night, woodsman.
The princess steps out of his way and watches him.
Excuse me.
The woodsman brushes past a crystal candelabra and sits on a high-backed couch. All at once, he swings himself onto his side and lies curled up in a ball.
Pleasant dreams, woodsman.
The princess removes her cap of golden mesh and shakes out her long hair. Her handmaid watches her leave.
Don't forget, return before dawn. The king will surely find out.
The woodsman puts on his invisible cloak. The handmaid sees him vanish. Now the princess runs through the deserted assembly hall. Reaching the king's throne, she stops and looks behind her. Slowly, she pushes open a wall panel behind the throne, steps through, and goes to close it. The panel doesn't budge. She looks questioningly at the other side of the pivoting door, then is able to push it shut. Now she descends a narrow stone staircase. Stopping briefly, the princess pulls the hood of her long satiny cape over her head, then continues down. Stepping outside, she closes a large wooden door behind her. As the princess trots down a wide set of stairs, the wooden door opens and shuts again. Unaware of being followed, the princess races down the wide staircase. The woodsman suddenly appears headless and sitting on his rear end at the bottom of the stairs. He removes his invisible hood and rubs his head. As the princess hurries down another staircase, the woodsman starts after her. He rushes back to the foot of the stairs and searches the floor with his hands. Grabbing the invisible cloak, he continues the chase. He jumps over a stone wall and spies the princess getting into a horse-drawn carriage. As the carriage starts off, the woodsman bounds down the final flight of stairs and jumps on the back. He sits in an open-air seat between the carriage's large back wheels. Letting out a big breath, he wraps the invisible cloak around his shoulders. With a sly grin, he pulls the hood over his head and vanishes completely. Now, at a gypsy camp, a musician strikes mallets on a dulcimer as others play violins. Dozens of men and women dance in the forest clearing, which is surrounded by flamboyant covered wagons. One man lifts his dance partner, while others spin their women around, causing their short dresses to twirl up. As the princess reaches the edge of the gypsy camp, she throws off her long cape, revealing a red dress with a short, airy skirt. As the woodsman removes his invisible cloak and tucks it in his jacket, he watches the princess run into a dancer's arms. The woodsman removes his jacket and hangs it on a short tree branch. Smiling, he pulls his half mask from under his red cummerbund and slips it over his eyes. In the clearing, the princess's dance partner crouches. She kneels on his shoulder and he stands, spinning her around. At the edge of the camp, the disguised woodsman gives the princess's cape a satisfied pat, then joins the celebration. He does dancing kicks on the hitching rail of a parked wagon. He jumps on board as men pull the covered wagon, whose frame is stripped of its canvas. The woodsman does a handstand atop one of its arched ribs. He swings into a flip, hooks his knees on a second rib, and dismounts. Now, the woodsman vaults back onto the wagon, swinging his legs over the bed. As he dances on it, he grabs one of the frame's ribs and swings around the outside. A gypsy hands the woodsman a rope. As he jumps onto an adjacent table, he stomps along, kicks aside a candle, and twirls the rope in quick circles. The princess grins as she watches the masked stranger's footwork. As the woodsman does a cartwheel off the table, the princess steps up onto it. The princess dances in a pair of gold slippers. Her red skirt is made of veil-like strips that flutter with her confident strutting moves. The woodsman's eyes stay fixed on her as he passes in front of the table. His head comes as high as her waist. He swings his rope at her ankles twice, but she hops over it. On the third try, the princess grabs it to her waist, and the woodsman lifts her onto his shoulder. He brings her down off the table. She leans back in his arms, and he carries her, her feet trailing gracefully across the ground. The woodsman brings the princess back to her feet. They dance around each other. As he flourishes his arms, she alternates throwing her hands in the air with placing them on her hips. Now, the woodsman runs across the camp to a springy platform and bounces high off of it. The princess follows with her arms outstretched. He catches her, and they climb onto the table. The woodsman skips onto the adjacent wagon, then hops off. The princess cartwheels off the wagon into his arms. He kneels, and they strike a dramatic pose. A gypsy begins to play his violin. As the revelers pair up and disperse into their covered wagons, a low mist rolls into the clearing. The disguised woodsman and princess are left alone. His hand gently reaches up to her cheek, and the couple glides across the foggy camp. As the woodsman holds her arm, facing her, she arches back and gently kicks up her leg. The woodsman kneels down in front of her and places his hands on her waist. She softly falls into his arms, and he leans her back across his knee. Now the princess runs off with flitting steps, her arms outstretched. The woodsman gives chase around the camp. As they make a full circle around the camp, the woodsman takes the princess's hand and tenderly pulls her close. Wrapping an arm around her waist, he dips her low. As they both face forward, the princess leans against him and hooks her leg back around his thigh. He hugs her from behind, then carries her, holding one arm around her bent knees. As she looks into his eyes, he spins her around. Her arms drape around his neck and her hair swings freely. Now, the masked woodsman sets her down, and she leans way back in his arms. With their gazes fixed on each other, he bends down on one knee and dips her. She gently reaches for his mask. The princess gets to her feet and rushes into the forest. The woodsman watches her go, then runs off in the same direction. As the princess retrieves her long cape, the woodsman returns to his own secluded spot and takes off his mask. The princess darts back to the camp and looks around. Finding it empty, she sadly bows her head and lifts up her hood. As she hurries back into the forest, the woodsman ducks out of sight. He checks his inside pocket, then follows after her. Nearby, the carriage awaits.
Coachman, have you seen him? Man.
No, princess, I have seen no one, but there is another man waiting at the castle that you must marry if you are late.
The princess gazes longingly toward the forest. Then the coachman helps her into the carriage. The woodsman peeks at her from behind a small leafy tree. He runs from his hiding place as the coachman climbs into his seat and takes the reins. As the carriage pulls away, the woodsman runs after it. Inside, the princess touches her lips thoughtfully and bows her head. The woodsman rides on the open-air seat at the back of the carriage. Up front, the coachman snaps the horse's reins. He has a long white mustache that hangs down past his chin. Our view skims rapidly along the windy road, and trees whip past on either side of us. A lake on the right shows the reflection of distant mountains. At the carriage's rear, the woodsman leans way over and peers under the carriage. In the upside-down view, the road streams by like a gravel ceiling. The woodsman sits up dizzily and shakes his head. Inside, the princess turns to a small curtain window behind her. The woodsman quickly puts on the invisible cloak and vanishes just as the princess peers out. She watches the road trail away rapidly, then slumps gloomily into her seat. The coachman leans forward as he urges on the horses. The carriage speeds through a group of chickens. They flap their wings as they scatter. Now the coachman spits out white feathers. The horses' hooves pound on the dirt road as they gallop along. As the carriage passes over a small wooden bridge, its spoked wheels roll straight along the planks. In the rear seat, the woodsman's head suddenly appears as he pulls back his invisible hood. Smiling, he takes the cloak all the way off. Inside the silk-lined carriage, the princess gets jostled and grabs hold of a hand strap. The coachman guides the carriage along a bumpy road. In the rear seat, the woodsman holds on tight and stands up. The woodsman peers around the side of the carriage. A low tree branch snags and springs back as they pass under. The woodsman jumps off the moving carriage and reaches for the low branch. He grabs hold of the air and tugs. It's the invisible cloak. The branch bobs up and down with each yank, and the woodsman stuffs the cloak under his jacket. Hearing the horse's hooves, the woodsman looks downhill at the roadside. He spots the carriage on a stretch of neighboring road. The woodsman does a cartwheel and tumbles down the hill. Our view of the ground rotates faster and faster as he rolls downward. As he gets to his feet at the bottom of the hill, the carriage passes by on a lower road. The woodsman jumps onto the roof. He spins around on his stomach to face the rear, then gets to his knees. They roll under another low branch, which swats the woodsman's rear end. The woodsman gives an annoyed smirk, then gets to his feet and faces frontward. He jumps a pine branch that skims over the carriage roof. Then he looks back and shakes his finger at it. Inside the carriage, the princess looks up suspiciously, then flashes a dismissive smile. On the roof, the woodsman spots a huge tree branch looming ahead. As the carriage rolls under it, the woodsman slams into the branch and drops onto the road. A tiny bird flies out of his jacket. He smiles, then runs after the carriage with a determined glare. Now, as the carriage jostles along a wooded path strewn with leaves, the princess grabs hold of the hand strap inside. Her eyes check between the curtains. Outside, the road cuts through a small hill. Walls of exposed bedrock stream by on either side of the carriage. The princess smooths her hair and straightens the hood of her cape. As the carriage approaches a long wooden bridge, the princess pulls back a side curtain and peers out. Under a brilliant blue sky, a distant ridge in the middle of a valley is crowned by a gleaming castle. The princess leans back in her seat and thoughtfully strokes her hair. Meanwhile, the woodsman, still pursuing, sees the carriage leave the far end of the bridge. He takes a deep breath and stumbles forward. Several of the bridge's planks are missing, leaving long gaps in the platform. The woodsman grabs hold of the bridge's handrail and looks down. Far below, a river runs through a jagged gorge. The woodsman continues on dizzily, tripping over one of the gaps. Recovering, he places a hand over his eyes. Now, our view staggers side to side as we move forward across the dilapidated bridge. The woodsman's foot comes down on a slender crosspiece, which gives and drops out from under him. The scrap of wood falls hundreds of feet to the raging river below. The woodsman hangs between the planks, his elbows propped up on either side. He swings his legs up topside and hurries on. Later, at the castle, the king holds up his daughter's worn-through slippers.
You tried and you failed. How sad. Too bad. Get to work.
Just a moment. Your Majesty, I know how the princess wears holes in her slippers.
I don't believe it. Not a word. Princess! Where does she walk?
Well, nowhere. She dances. All night.
Fiddlesticks.
Alone in her bedroom?
No. She goes through a hidden door and then rides his carriage.
Oh, I've got you now. I know every hidden door, secret room, and the sliding palace in the panel. The panel in the panel. Botheration, off with his head.
The executioner closes in on the woodsman, brandishing his battle axe. As he swings high, the woodsman ducks. As he swings low, the woodsman jumps. The woodsman hides behind the king.
I'm the king!
Now, let me show you.
As the woodsman pushes open the secret panel behind the throne, the princess enters the hall. The king looks at the passage.
Nobody tells me anything. Now, you see? He guessed your secret. Every night, dancing and prancing. I'd love to dance, but nobody asks me. Well, a bargain is a bargain, so now we'll have a great big party.
There'll be no party. I shall never marry him.
Tut, 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 my girl. You're not the king. You're only a princess, which isn't as good. Besides, I gave my word.
And last night I gave my heart to a stranger.
The princess turns away. As she marches past the woodsman, he grabs her arm and holds the half mask over his eyes. The princess gives a bewildered smile, and the woodsman lowers the mask. He throws it aside and takes the princess in his arms. As they dance, the king shrugs off his ermine-trimmed mantle. The king and his official dance together. They bang stomachs. The hulking executioner and the peewee jester bow to each other and they join in a dance. The executioner lifts the jester in the air and spins him. The woodsman and princess glide across the floor, making tight circles as members of the court pair off and join them. The princess's bare shoulders show above the white fur-trimmed collar of her golden gown. Twirling among the other courtiers, she and the woodsman gaze into each other's eyes. Now, back in the Grimm's home, Wilhelm sits on the edge of his son's bed.
And they lived happily ever after.
He smiles to himself, looks down at the pipe in his hand, then at his two sleeping children. They lie peacefully under the covers. As Wilhelm slowly rises to his feet, he lifts the dachshund from his lap and places it on his son's bed. Reaching for the oil lamp between the beds, Wilhelm turns the flame down low, then steps toward the door of the darkened bedroom.
Shh!
As Wilhelm opens the door, light from the hallway outlines his shadowy form. Dorothea approaches him from behind as he gently closes the door. He turns and they come face to face.
Well, I gave them a severe talking to about their grammar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I told them one story.
A story that will give them nightmares.
Oh, no, it was a beautiful story. About the dancing princess and the woodsman.
You mean the tailor?
Tailor? The way you heard it, it was a tailor.
The way I heard it, you were a reformed man. Well, you aren't. You're absolutely beyond redemption. All I can say for you is, I love you.
She throws her arms around his neck, and they embrace in a long kiss.
I've work to do.
As Wilhelm enters the dimly lit study, he sees Jacob writing at a desk.
The work is almost done. Go to bed.
What is your object? To make me feel guilty?
My object is to finish this wretched thing on time.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you remember the story of the dancing princess? Whom did she marry, a woodsman or a tailor?
A farmer.
A farmer?
An honest, conscientious, hard-working farmer.
Jacob glares at his brother.
A farmer?
It was a fisherman.
A fish?
Now outside Stossel's bookshop.
How do you know?
Because I'm a man of infinite wisdom, who has heard the story 1,000 times.
But that's terrible. Tailor, woodsman, farmer, fisherman. 4 different versions. Now, isn't that terrible?
It is terrible. Come on.
Jacob walks off.
You know, that proves my point. These stories should be written down.
Better you should write about girls.
Wilhelm starts to walk away with a stern gaze. His eyes brighten and he turns back to Stossel.
Talking about girls, Miss Greta Heinrich.
Yeah?
Will you tell us something from me?
He glances at his distant brother, then whispers in Stossel's ear.
Wilhelm! We'll be late! I'll be there!
Stossel grins broadly.
I'll be delighted.
Wilhelm runs off. Later in the Grimm sitting room.
It was a delicious dinner, Mrs. Grimm.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Won't you sit here, Miss Heinisch?
Oh, thank you.
Dorothea waves Greta over to a settee, then sits. Wilhelm and the children fill in the rest of the chairs, leaving Jacob the seat beside Greta.
We hope, Miss Heinrich, Jacob, and all of us, that you like our town.
Oh, I do. The people are so friendly.
It must seem very quiet to you after living in Berlin. Still, we hope, Jacob and all of us, that you won't hurry away.
Well, it was to have been just a short visit, but I wouldn't mind staying indefinitely.
Wilhelm, it's getting late.
Get the children. It's time to go to bed now. Say goodnight to Miss Heinrich.
Goodnight, Miss Heinrich.
Goodnight, Uncle Jacob.
Goodnight, Uncle Jacob.
That's right.
Come on, off you go to sleep.
Run along.
Your children are charming, Mr. Grimm.
Thank you. Children are a speciality of the Grimm family. We hope that yours will be equally as,
Wilhelm draws on his pipe.
Yes, well, it's getting late. I think I'll go on up too.
Oh, stay. Talk a while with us. Tell Miss Heinrich one of your stories. Wilhelm has a very fertile imagination.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, you would hardly believe what fantastic thoughts occur to him. Go ahead, Wilhelm. Let us have one of your stories.
Funny, I just can't seem to remember any. Oh, they come and go, slip away. It's a pity there isn't someone to write them down. Ah, well. Good night. Good night.
Wilhelm leaves. Greta shifts closer to Jacob, who stares uncomfortably ahead.
It was most kind of you to take pity on a stranger and invite me here.
Jacob stares.
To be honest, it was not I who invited you.
I thought...
Wilhelm listens from the stairs.
That is, I was given the impression that it was your idea.
Say yes.
In all honesty, no.
It's a rare experience, Mr. Grimm, to meet a man so honest. I shan't inquire whether you wish to take me home, but since it's getting late...
But, honesty, Miss Heinrich, requires the whole truth. Although it was not my idea, I'm very glad you were invited here. Equally glad that you accepted.
Mm. Tell me about your work, Mr. Grimm.
No,
Jacob, don't, please.
I'd like to ask you a question, Miss Heinrich. A rather personal question. How did you like my book?
Oh, I was enchanted.
Enchanted? By legal antiquities?
Oh, well, the subject isn't important.
I beg your pardon.
What enchanted me was the tremendous knowledge and intelligence it took to write such a book. Forgive me, Mr. Grimm, but I must be honest, too. You are a brilliantly fascinating man.
Nonsense. I'm a conscientious scholar. Dedicated to his work, that's all.
Daytime. The Duke, seated on a mock-up of a horse, poses for a painter.
Grover!
Your Grace, if this portrait is to grace the cover of Your Grace's family history, may I ask that Your Grace face this way and smile?
The Duke's teeth clench in an awkward grin.
Grover!
Sir? You've finished reading it, Your Grace? Have the brothers Grimm done you proper justice, Your Grace? Are you pleased, Your Grace?
You're very good at asking questions. Now answer one. Do I look pleased?
He throws the manuscript at Gruber.
Get those brothers and bring them here!
As Gruber scurries off, the Duke looks toward the painter and grins. Now, three boys play leapfrog on a cobblestone street. Wilhelm runs up from behind and jumps over each of them, then enters Stossel's bookshop.
Stossel! You've always been a good, true, loyal, and dear friend. Good morning, dear ladies. Now I'm going to give you a chance to prove it.
May I prove it later? I'm waiting on these dear ladies.
Well, what are they looking for?
Mr. Stossel knows my tastes.
Who doesn't? Ah, just a thing. History of the Hundred Years' War. Every page reeking with blood and gore. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Really, Wilhelm, come on.
Listen, we've just finished writing the Duke's family history. Now I can concentrate on collecting and writing stories.
Stories about girls?
Oh, Stossel, you worry me. A priceless literary heritage is dying. Now, unless these wonderful fairy tales are written down and published, they'll soon be forgotten. Now, look, you know a man called Dantino.
Dantino, yes, the foremost publisher of Berlin.
That's right.
A good, true, and loyal friend.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure he'd agree that you are a complete loony.
How true.
Who'd want such a book?
Anyone with a desire to be happy. I would. They would.
They? Who are they?
Wilhelm runs outside.
You, and you. Come on, come inside.
He rushes the three boys into the shop.
Really, they should lock him up. He's dangerous.
Shh. Now, don't be frightened. I just want to ask. Do you want a book of fairy tales?
No, sir.
Hup. Of course you do. Why not?
I can't read.
Well, you can hear, can't you?
Yes.
All right, then.
One boy runs for the door.
Come here.
He lifts the boy onto a counter.
Wilhelm, what are you doing?
He lifts the two other boys onto the counter, then pushes a stool in front of Stossel.
Sit down, madam.
My dear. Oh.
Wilhelm pulls out chairs for the two ladies.
If you please.
The ladies sit.
And not another word out of anyone. Now listen.
Wilhelm leans his elbows on a table.
Once upon a time, there was a cobbler. An old, old cobbler. He had snowy white hair, a big, thick mustache, bushy eyebrows riding on a sea of wrinkles.
In a workshop, the cobbler paints a face on an elf-like doll.
He worked very hard, day in and day out. But for various reasons, his customers were not pleased.
Working by the light from the window, the cobbler peers out and gives a sudden frown. As a horse-drawn carriage stops in front of his workshop, he scurries across the room, hides the doll behind a curtain, and starts to work on a shoe. An elegantly dressed nobleman in a tricorn hat enters.
Yes? Your Royal Mayor.
Are my shoes ready?
Not yet, Your Excellency.
Not yet? Why, the King's Christmas party's tomorrow afternoon. If my shoes aren't ready, it'll go hard with you.
To be sure, Your Worship, but may
I... No buts. I shall return tomorrow morning. Early.
The Mayor walks out in a huff.
I'll try my very best.
The cobbler peers out the window. The bottom of each pane is covered with frost. As the mayor's carriage rolls away, townspeople bustle past an orphanage across the street.
Pure of heart and mind and hand, I shall dwell in Christmas land. In my heart the Christmas spirit, listen closely, you can hear it.
Five children peer through a second-story window. The cobbler smiles up at them, then steps away from the window. He resumes work. Glancing across the room, he drops the mayor's shoe, goes to the curtain shelf, and retrieves the elf-like doll. A bell by the door swings on a hook. A woman in a pink cape twirls in.
My slippers, they are finished, dear cobbler? Are they?
The cobbler quickly puts the doll away.
Regretfully, I've been so busy, I...
My slippers? How am I to dance for a king?
I'll try, Your Ballerinaship.
Do not dance. The king will be mad with rage. And I would hate to see you. Boy, I know it.
She glides out, pulling the door shut behind her.
I didn't think I'd care much for it myself.
The cobbler picks up a leather shoe and places it in front of him, sole side up. He pours a few small nails into his palm, then pops them into his mouth. A large man with a bushy mustache swings open the top half of the workshop door.
Cobbler!
The cobbler swallows as the man barges all the way in.
Yes, your hunting boots, I know, but they're not quite as ready yet, I hope.
They're not. By tomorrow, instead of hunting wild pigs for the king's table...
He aims his musket at the man.
I'll be hunting tame cobbler.
You understand?
Yes, Your Marksmanship.
The hunter peers down the barrel. The hunter jerks the aimed musket. He leaves, slamming the top half of the door behind him. Outside, five children wearing dirty, ragged clothes exit the orphanage across the street. The smallest one trails behind. All five kneel in front of the open bottom half of the cobbler's door. They watch the old man.
I suppose you're going to the king's birthday party, too.
No. We came to sing for you.
Why?
Because you like us.
Do not. Why don't you, get jobs or get married?
Nobody asked me.
Well, then go and see your good luck elf. They handle those things for you.
Orphans don't have good luck, elves.
Nonsense.
Everybody's got good luck held. If you don't believe in them, they won't come to you. I'll tell you about it sometime. Go home. I'm busy. Billy, Billy, busy. Go home.
He takes a nail from his mouth and hammers it into a shoe. Frowning, the children get up and walk away. The last one pulls the door shut. As the children cross the street, the littlest orphan reopens the bottom half of the door.
You do like us, don't you?
Do not.
Do too.
Do not.
A girl joins them.
You got to, because nobody else does.
They leave, and the cobbler fixes a soft gaze on the door. Nighttime. Outside, the snow-dusted street lies empty. Inside the cobbler's shop, a wooden bird pokes in and out of a cuckoo clock, which reads 12 midnight. The cobbler yawns as he works a piece of leather. He rests his head on the stand in front of him and falls asleep. On the curtain shelf behind him, a bearded doll wearing a red cap comes to life and rubs his eyes.
I'm up. All right. I said I'm up.
He sits up.
But why?
He pats the doll next to him.
Why?
Yeah, why what?
Why am I up?
Ask him.
He points toward three other dolls.
Hey, why am I up?
How should I know?
Why am I up?
He shakes a yellow-clad doll.
Because it's Christmas Eve.
Aha! I've got it.
He's got it.
He can have it.
Christmas is the time for good cheer. Good cheer is what we bring because we're good luck elves.
I'd rather be a bad luck elf.
Why?
'Cause he gave me a crooked mouth, that's why.
Don't you like your mouth?
No.
Then keep it shut. Unless those shoes are finished by morning, he's in terrible trouble.
Good. Serves him right.
Get to work. Everybody.
The elves stay put.
Get to work. Begin. Get busy. Commence. Go!
What's wrong?
How do you fix shoes?
I know. You cut.
A blue-clad elf jumps off the ledge.
You stitch.
The yellow elf follows.
You glue.
A red elf does a flip.
You shine.
A green-clad elf slides down.
It's fun to whack with a tack and a hammer.
The pointy-eared elves work on the shoes, which are as long as they are high.
To brush some glue on the shoes, what you do for the heel? You brush some glue on the shoe for the heel.
You do get sticky, but gee, you feel.
One elf dangles from stringy glue on his hands.
To whack away on shoes, we'll chase the stack of glue.
They throw finished shoes in a pile.
You're awake
and dreamy.
As the green elf naps by a lady's boot, the bearded elf snaps a rag at him.
To shine from the front to the back with a whack and a wham.
A wham.
From front to back with a whack and a wham.
If that ain't heaven, don't know what am.
The blue elf tries wearing a pair of the huge shoes. He does a dance of stamps and kicks. On the floor, the bearded elf pushes along a pair of suede boots and bumps into the cobbler's leg. The old man wakes up, but the green elf knocks him on the head with a mallet. He conks out.
Not so high.
I'm paying him back for my crooked mouth.
To whack away on shoes, we'll trace the sack of blues. We'll make life shake when you're awake.
And two pink ballet slippers dance by themselves. It's the blue elf and the red elf making the move. Now the elves work together to mount heels on shoes. The green elf carries a shoe upside down with his head inside it. One elf applies glue to the sole, another adds the heel. Then the bearded elf pounds it with a hammer. The green elf's knees buckle under each whack.
It's fun to whack with a hammer and tack.
Now the elves arranged the shiny finished shoes. The blue elf and red elf toss the ballet slippers up onto a hook, and the bearded elf waves a signal. He climbs up a thread. One at a time, the others swing, vault, and twirl back onto the shelf. They close the curtain, then freeze in their original positions. A dozen pair of shoes and boots sit in a neat row under a Christmas tree. The cobbler wakes and sits up straight on his stool. His eyes blink open behind his thin-framed spectacles, and he smacks his lips together sleepily. He rushes to the shelf and collects the lifeless dolls. Later, in a long, narrow bedroom, the five orphans sleep in small beds lined up side by side. A pair of shoes sits on the footboard of each bed. The cobbler sneaks into the room and leaves a doll with each pair of shoes. He carefully tiptoes to the door, gazes at the sleeping children, and shakes a tiny brass bell that hangs by the door jamb. He leaves quickly, closing the door behind him. The orphans sit up in bed and notice the dolls. Two of the children jump up and down on their beds as another looks lovingly at her doll. The cobbler cracks open the bedroom door and peeks in at the excited children. The cobbler smiles to himself and leaves. Outside, it snows. As the cobbler crosses the street, he finds the mayor, Hunter, and Ballerina waiting by his workshop.
Cobbler, open up! Blast you, cobbler, my hunting boots! Open up!
Cobbler, open the door! I need my shoes!
Oh, my dancing slippers, they must be ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, your worship, your ballerinaship, your marksmanship, I am afraid you are not going to like what I have to tell you.
Just what do you mean by that?
You see, it's Christmas, and some people, little people, but very, very important people, were forgotten. So I decided that since it was Christmas, that I would...
As the hunter goes to enter, the mayor stops him and walks in first. The ballerina follows, and the hunter goes last. The customers spot their finished shoes.
Oh, how beautiful! Oh, wonderful!
Good and sturdy, cobbler! You had me worried!
Old rope! There you are, my man. Well done.
He hands him a pouch.
Twice your usual price, cobbler. And a Merry Christmas to you.
Well, a Merry Christmas to you, your lordship.
I shall dance like a princess. And the king will know it's all because of you.
She kisses his cheek.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Well, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
The cobbler watches as his customers file out of the shop. He steps into the center of the room and looks around. With his spectacles raised, he stares at the collection of newly made shoes.
But I didn't. How could I?
He scratches his head.
Maybe I didn't. I must have. Hold on.
The cobbler hurriedly removes his working hat and replaces it with a knit cap. He wraps a black cape over his shoulders and grabs hold of a crooked wooden cane. Outside, the five orphans' round faces peek through a barred window as the cobbler approaches.
Pure of heart and mind and hand, I shall dwell in Christmas land. In my heart, the Christmas spirit, listen closely. You can hear it.
The cobbler waves to them.
Christmas land.
The children walk out of the orphanage, bowing their heads under the falling snow. As they follow the cobbler down the street, the littlest one lags behind and runs to keep up.
On my cheeks two roses grow.
He drops his doll, scurries back to get it, then runs after the others. Children gather by the cobbler in front of a church, and he takes them inside. Now, Dorothea enters the bookshop.
Wilhelm, the Duke!
Just a minute, dear. Well, did you like the story?
Yes.
Where's Jacob?
In the park with Greta. Would you like a whole book? book of stories?
Uh-huh.
You would? You
would? Really would? Oh, marvelous, marvelous, bless you. Just a minute. How much money have you got?
None.
You?
None.
How about you?
One kreutzer.
One kreutzer. Out, out, all of you.
Now, Stoss.
Write about girls, please.
Wilhelm, the Duke wants to see you and Jacob.
Oh, but where is Jacob?
In the park with Greta.
Oh, yes, yes, that's right.
Wilhelm turns to Stossel.
Oh, can't you think of anything except money? And girls at your age, really?
Wilhelm!
Dorothea pushes him out. Wilhelm sprints up a cobblestone road that has wide sets of stairs built into its center. He enters a park. Two low turrets with cone-shaped roofs sit on either end of an arched gate. Ahead of Wilhelm, a dark-haired man and blonde woman stroll arm-in-arm along a path.
Jacob! Jacob! Jacob, the Duke, he sent for us. Excuse me, Greta. But you're not Greta. I thought you said you were taking Greta. Oh, well, I'm so terribly sorry. Do excuse me. Good luck to you both.
Wilhelm runs off. Elsewhere in the park, Jacob and Greta stand under a large tree.
We've been gone some time now. My aunt will be wondering, so perhaps we'd better...
One other thing. A question. A question requiring a great deal of thought, consideration. Pros and cons, the advantages and disadvantages.
What is the question?
I shan't expect an immediate answer. A decision like this cannot be made instantly.
Well, the question...
Will you marry me?
When?
When? You mean you will?
Well, of course.
Without even thinking?
Oh, Jacob, the first time I saw you, I knew I was going to fall in love with you.
Amazing.
I have fallen in love with you. And more than anything in the world, I would like to marry you. Are there any more questions?
Just one. May I kiss you?
Of course.
Very well.
Jacob looks around nervously, then gives Greta's cheek a peck. As he straightens, Greta takes his chin in hand and kisses him softly on the lips. As she pulls away, Jacob throws his arms around her in a tight embrace, and they kiss. Wilhelm runs past the couple, stops short, and gapes. He taps his brother on the shoulder.
Jacob! Jacob, the Duke! He wants to see us right away. Excuse me, Greta.
We are going to be married.
I'm terribly sorry. Come on!
Wilhelm freezes.
Married! Oh, that's wonderful! Oh, I'm so pleased.
He kisses Greta, then races off with Jacob. Later, in a spacious and ornate hall, the Duke peruses the manuscript.
Correct me if I'm wrong. By the terms of your contract, you guaranteed to write a complete and accurate history of my family. Notable deeds, meritorious service in war and peace, etc.
That is correct.
I said correct me if I'm wrong. Said family history to be dedicated and presented to His Majesty the King of Russia.
Wilhelm inspects a freestanding suit of armor.
Anniversary of his coronation.
The armor's hand comes off. Wilhelm hides it.
What are you doing?
I'm just sneezing, Your Grace.
Don't touch that. It's priceless.
Yes, sir.
This is the complete history.
Yes, Your Grace. And may I point out that we finished 2 days early?
May I point out you've chopped off one whole branch of my family, the Rheinburg branch.
Wilhelm hurriedly tries to reattach the armor's hand.
Of Rheinburg.
Yes, sir, but I thought...
I don't pay you to think, I pay you to write.
In point of fact, sir, you haven't paid us at all.
Hark, the minstrel speaks. That tale teller who steals my time to collect frogs and dogs, hags and dragons. Haven't paid you, eh? Have I given you a house for 6 months rent-free?
Yes, but,
Yes, but you will receive no money until you fulfill your contract. Now then, you thought what, my illustrious scholar?
Well, sir, in your library, there's very little about the Rheinbergs. And in fact, it's not very flattering. For example, the behavior of Baron Ulrich at the Battle of...
That's a lie!
As Wilhelm tries to fix the suit of armor, the entire arm comes off.
Perhaps, but he's such a distant relative.
Baron Ulrich is the nephew by marriage of His Majesty the King of Prussia.
The Duke points to a large portrait and stomps in salute.
I see, sir. Well, we'll be back at work first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning, you'll take the boat to Rheinburg. In the cathedral archives, you'll find all names and dates.
Unseen by the Duke, Wilhelm fusses with the armor.
But this is very difficult for us, sir. We have only 2 days left, and I doubt that we can finish on time.
Oh, you will. Because if you don't, I will throw you out of your house and into debtor's prison, where I will make it difficult for you beyond anything you can possibly imagine.
Wilhelm taps the arm on. The entire suit of armor collapses.
I'm so sorry, Your Grace.
Go!
Purely unintentional, Your Grace.
Go!
I apologize, Your Grace.
Go!
The Duke brandishes a sword.
Go! Go!
On the wall of the Duke's Grand Hall, mechanical figurines move on a 10-foot-high clock. Now, a word is superimposed over a still view of a wooded clearing where sheep graze by a pond. Intermission. The bow of a cargo boat cuts through a river. 5-foot anchors flank the bow, and wooden barrels line the deck. On board, Wilhelm steps past some stacked crates and baskets of produce. At the railing, he gazes to the shoreline, puffing contentedly on a pipe. Later, the brothers disembark at a village. White letters on a grassy incline read, Rheinberg. Wilhelm follows Jacob across a small pier, carrying his writing box. In town, villagers fill a decorated plaza where tall poles are draped with garland.
What's going on? It must be a celebration.
Go directly to the church and talk to the priest in charge of the ark.
Look, it's a festival tree. Oh. It is a celebration.
Wilhelm helps the men erect a decorated pole.
I said. What are we celebrating?
It's a wine festival.
It's a wine festival. Did you hear that?
And did you hear what I said?
Yes. Go to the church, talk to the priest, collect all important data on the Rheinberg branch of the family, especially anything relating to the King of Prussia, and report back here at 5 o'clock.
Several villagers slap Wilhelm on the back appreciatively. As Wilhelm eagerly shakes hands, he shakes Jacob's hand, too.
The boat leaves at 5 o'clock. We must be on it. Remember that.
Don't worry. I never forget a thing.
Wilhelm gets a glass of wine from a serving woman's tray and starts off.
Wilhelm!
Jacob points to the writing box on the ground, and Wilhelm retrieves it. Later, in a choir loft, a gray-haired director conducts a group of young boys. In the sanctuary, a few parishioners sit in the cathedral's wooden pews. Paintings framed by elaborate gilding line the walls. An arched colonnade leads to the rear loft. Wilhelm enters the sanctuary with a priest.
I'm very grateful, Father. It's been a pleasure delving into the past with you.
You were bored to death, Mr. Grimm, and I respect you for it. Nothing is quite so dull as digging up obscure names and dates which should be allowed to rest in oblivion. Give me young, living voices. Singing Mozart.
Wilhelm and the priest gaze up at the ornate choir loft and its tall organ pipes. Soft daylight illuminates the soaring white sanctuary as parishioners keep their hands folded in prayer. Lifting his hands to mark the music swells, the choir director turns and looks over his shoulder across the church. As he faces away from the boys, several of the young singers sneak off. One boy taps another boy's arm, and he joins the exiting group. As they steal down a staircase, the priest and Wilhelm spot them.
Father,
pay no attention. Today is Friday.
Friday? Oh, yes, yes, so it is.
Single file, the boys tiptoe downstairs, then race out through the open gate. The priest smiles at Wilhelm.
Every Friday, as long as anyone can remember, the children of Rheinberg have been invited to visit Anna Richten. There are some who call her a witch. Do you believe in witches, Mr. Grimm?
Witches?
Oh, you don't. I should have thought you did.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I...
Well, she's no witch. She only has the power to bewitch and beguile and create a world of beauty that even Mozart would envy. She tells the most wonderful fairy tales ever heard.
Fairy tales? Is that where they're going?
Shh.
The priest turns his back as one last boy sneaks out. Wilhelm turns to the clergyman.
Father, when I was his age, I used to do the same thing every Friday. I'd gladly do it again right now, but it's too late. Only children are invited.
Well, I must be going. You've been most helpful. A million thanks. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Outside, the youngsters scurry down a cobblestone street and through an arched tunnel. Quickly, Wilhelm hurries out of the church and takes off after them with his writing box. As they all pass through a town square, four men pound cobblestones into place with thick logs. The children descend a rustic wooden staircase built onto the outer wall of a stone building. Wilhelm peeks down a narrow alley, grins as he catches sight of them, then sets down the stairs himself in pursuit. He stops midway, peers over the railing, then continues down. As he nears the bottom, he hops over the side, skipping the last few steps. Joined by other children, the choir boys cross a footbridge over a stream, then head through a stone archway covered with bright red vines. Behind them, Wilhelm runs across the footbridge. He comes to the vine-covered arch as the last child far ahead disappears around a corner. Now the children race across a wooded hillside. One girl in an apron and kerchief trips and falls, then recovers and hurries on. Now the children pass behind a row of bushes. Their heads bob above the leafy shrubs as they pass. Behind them, Wilhelm reaches the wooded hillside and pauses to wipe his brow. Looking ahead, he spots a tall red plume moving behind the bushes. The bonnet feather stops, turns, then sets off again. Wilhelm's mouth lifts in a grin, and he heads after the little girl. She crosses a stream, stepping from rock to rock. Now Wilhelm runs down the bush-lined path to the rocky stream. He steps awkwardly from rock to rock, pauses midstream to steady himself on a boulder, then hops up onto the grassy bank. Up ahead, the girl in the feathered bonnet bounds down a forest path and glances over her shoulder. She comes to a thatched roofed cottage in a clearing. Chickens scatter as she runs up a walkway to the front door. Behind her, Wilhelm rests, leaning on a tree, and watches the little girl enter the cottage. He hurries up the walkway to the door. The storyteller, Anna, a woman with high cheeks and gray hair, answers.
What do you want?
Good afternoon, Nath. My name is Wilhelm Grimm. I've heard that
you've heard that I'm a witch, I suppose.
Oh, no.
You've come to scoff and jeer like everybody else.
No, quite the contrary. If I may, I'd very much like to come inside.
I won't have it. Go away.
She shuts the door on Wilhelm's foot.
Your foot is in my door.
Yes, I'm so sorry. Might I just come in and sit quietly and listen?
Children only.
Oh, but I'm much younger than I look. People tell me...
Anna bolts the door, shutting him out. Inside, children fill the tiny A-framed cottage. Anna faces the girl in the feathered bonnet.
You little monkey. You were late.
My mama made me take a nap.
Well, I hope it did you good. Now, my young scamps, what should we have?
The children crowd around Anna, tugging at her shawl.
Which of you would like to laugh today?
Three children raise their hands. Anna settles into a chair.
I can see you'd rather I made your blood run cold.
Yeah, scary, scary story!
Very well, a scary story it should be.
The attentive children rest their chins on their hands. Outside, Wilhelm strides past an open window.
Once upon a time, long, long ago, in a faraway land, there lived a huge and fearful dragon.
Wilhelm sits on a nearby bench and opens his writing box.
Tree in the forest. When he walked, it was an earthquake. When he breathed, a forest fire. All the people lived in terror of this monstrous beast who had invaded their land from no one knew where. For he ate up their crops, devoured their cattle, and carried off all the young children to his lair.
What for?
Dessert.
Oh. Didn't anyone try to stop him?
Of course they did. The king sent north, south, east, and west, offering half his kingdom to anyone who would come and slay this horrible beast. Many came to try and earn the reward, but the dragon sizzled them. Then he frizzled them. Then he gobbled them up, and he picked his teeth with their bones.
Now two men pass through a forest. One rides a horse.
Now it happened one fine day that two men, a knight named Ludwig and his servant Hans, set out in search of adventure.
The mustached knight sings.
Why am I thirsting and throbbing and bursting in the relishing basket of the ghastly adventure ahead? What sayest thou, eh?
Push your courageously, outlandish, outrageously brave.
Why am I not daunted by fears that would haunt the most fearless?
Because you're outrageously brave with a courage courageously peerless.
And now.
We go.
To add a dragon to my ego.
Ludwig and his chubby servant Hans approach a cave, which glows fiery red from within.
We're in luck, master! The dragon's at home!
Not so loud.
Ludwig hands his lance and shield to Hans. Hans then gets down on all fours beside the horse. Ludwig uses him as a footstool to get down, then tiptoes over to the mouth of the cave. He dances a jig.
D-R-A-G-O-N.
His helmet visor slams shut. He opens it.
Dragon. A 53-foot monster snorting fire. A 53, or maybe even higher.
Oh.
I heard one thrashing through the forest, crashing, and it seems a smashing day to bag him. D-R-A-G-O-N.
Ludwig grips his crooked lance.
Dragon.
He flips down his helmet's visor and heads toward the cave.
Dragon. All right, lad. In you go. I'll stay here and protect your rear.
That will take a bit of doing.
Hans holds the 10-foot lance and aims it nervously. His round rear protrudes as he walks. The portly servant's eyes widen as he steps into the cave. Scattered bones lie at his feet.
Go on, go
Gripping the spear with both hands, Han steps deeper into the dim cave. A fiery glow lights up the passage. Hans backs up.
Go on, you silly sausage!
Hans takes a few steps forward, then stops to wipe his brow. He leans his hand on a rocky ledge above, disturbing three large bats who flit around his head. Hans hurries along, ducking the circling bats, and stops inches from a cliff. Hans falls face down, his arms dangling off a ledge, high above a cavernous chamber.
Is he there? Speak up, Pudding Brain!
He seems to have gone, Master!
Well, let me at him!
Outside, Ludwig picks up his shield. He flips down the metal visor of his plumed helmet, draws his sword, and charges. His helmet bangs into the cave's low entrance, and he falls onto his back. Rising awkwardly to his feet, he hits his head a second time on the rocky ceiling. Dropping to his knees, he lifts his visor and moves forward. Ludwig grips his sword in one hand and his shield in the other as he crawls deeper into the tunnel. Inching forward in the cumbersome armor, he crawls past a skull. The knight reaches the ledge where Hans lies staring down into the deep cavern.
Are you sure he's gone?
I've looked all over the cave, Master.
Well, help me up.
Hans stands up, then clumsily steps on Ludwig's foot.
Oh, that beat.
Hans straightens the plume on Ludwig's helmet.
Who got the filthy beggar, took one look at me and realized he'd met his match. Right now, he's probably 100 leagues from here, running for his life.
A huge red-eyed dragon lifts its head.
Master?
Han spots it.
Hit it away. I should enjoy puncturing the ugly brute.
As the dragon curls its long forked tongue, Ludwig drops his sword and shield and cringes behind a boulder. Hans throws the lance at the dragon, who catches it in his mouth. The dragon munches it with his jaw and eats the lance. Dumbstruck, Hans and Ludwig move their mouths in sync. The dragon licks his chops. A lump moves down its long neck. Hans spots the sword and shield far below. As Ludwig hides behind a boulder, Hans scurries by through a puddle. He reaches a rough wall covered with roots, then picks his way down, using a series of small ledges like stairs. As the dragon pays attention to Ludwig, Hans gets the sword and shield. The dragon breathes fire. Ludwig ducks as cartoon-like flames shoot at him. Smoke rises from the blackened plume in his helmet. The dragon laughs as the spark-singed feather goes out. Below, Hans jabs at the dragon's bejeweled hide. The sword bends. As Hans stares at the flimsy weapon, Ludwig gives a frustrated twitch from above. Now Hans kicks the dragon's belly. As Ludwig watches, his helmet visor drops down. He lifts it up.
Don't anger him, just kill him!
Hans stomps up and down as he holds the sword and shield. The long-necked dragon cranes its head toward him. Its fiery breath heats the shield up, red hot. Hans chucks it, loses his balance, and falls. The dragon raises a three-taloned claw over him. Hans rolls out of the way, and its foot stomps the ground. The servant dodges another stomp and flees. On the upper ledge, Ludwig opens a small door in his armor. He removes a hanky. He gives it a flick of the wrist, gingerly dabs his nose, then puts it away. On the cavern floor, Hans runs around a stalagmite and comes face to face with the dragon. It opens its mouth wide. Hans runs the other way. He ducks behind a tall rock outcropping, then peeks around it, his chubby cheeks huffing and puffing. The dragon raises its head high and looks around. Above, Ludwig sneaks along the ledge. The dragon's ears prick up, and it sees him. Its fiery breath heats up the metal flap covering Ludwig's rear end. Jumping around, the knight sits in a pool of water. Steam billows up and shoots from his visor eye holes. The dragon watches, then gives us a bemused look. Ludwig's helmet pops off. Hans and the dragon watch it rise, then fall. The helmet lands squarely on Ludwig's head, and Ludwig removes it. He tosses it aside. As the dragon wriggles its ears, shooting flames from its nostrils, Ludwig recoils in terror. Ludwig scrambles behind a boulder. The dragon breathes more flames and disintegrates the top of the rock. Ludwig peeks from behind the remaining chunk. Again, the cavern glows red as another blast of fire incinerates the boulder's right half. Dirt billows from behind it as Ludwig digs frantically. Now, as Hans climbs up the stair-like ledges, more flames burn the last section of rock, exposing Ludwig. Hans crawls behind a different boulder high up on a ledge. Ludwig hides his face in his hands. Up on the other ledge, Hans pushes against the boulder. Meanwhile, the dragon leans its head inches from the cowering Ludwig and eyes the knight's rear end. Now, Hans spits in his palms, wipes them on his belt, and belly slams the boulder. It lands on the dragon's tail. Circling around and around, the dragon chases its bruised tail. It catches the tip in its mouth, then lets go. Rolling onto its side, the beast pulls its tail close with a taloned claw and gingerly licks it. Above, Hans grabs a hanging root.
Watch out, master! Here I come!
On the far side of the chamber, Hans swings on the root, cycling his legs wildly. Ludwig fetches his helmet and heads off.
Master, don't leave me!
I'm not leaving you. Cry, baby. I'm doing the help.
As Ludwig ducks into the tunnel, our view follows Hans swinging back and forth. His flailing legs narrowly miss the ledges that circle the chamber. Our view swings close to a tangle of roots, then far back from the wall. Below Hans, the dragon cranes its neck and watches him. Now our view hangs from the root too. We turn around and around, watching the ledge spin by faster and faster in a rotating blur. As the dragon stares up and follows the motion, its long scaly neck twists. The dragon stops looking and its neck quickly unwinds. Hans looks down at the dragon's gaping jaws. The beast lunges and snaps at Hans, just missing the servant's rear end. It gets a mouthful of root and spits it out. Hans hangs on and looks up as the root starts to give. Now outside. Ludwig looks feebly around.
I say, help!
In our dragon.
The dragon snaps again and again at Hans.
Not as hasty as I look.
Hans sticks out his tongue and the root snaps. He lands just behind the dragon's head. Hans slides down the long neck over the triangular points that run along its back. The dragon bucks. It thrashes its head to and fro and Hans falls onto the cavern floor. The chubby man ducks under the dragon's belly. The dragon curls its neck around and looks for Hans, then spots him under its stomach. The dragon presses its belly down on Hans. As Hans grimaces, the dragon pushes him down further into the soft dirt. Hans spots Ludwig's sword nearby, crawls out, and grabs it. He scrambles in front of the dragon. As the dragon flashes its red eyes, Hans gets a determined look on his face. He aims the sword and plunges the blade into the dragon's chest. The dragon shakes its head dismissively, then suddenly throws its head back. Red smoke billows out of the puncture and fills the air as the beast falters and works its fanged jaws. It lunges at Hans, then recoils. Hans waves his arms to scatter the thick red smoke. As he backs away, the dragon lies down on the ground and breathes fire from its nostrils. It clambers back onto its feet. As Hans backs closer to a gap in the wall, the fiery glow fills the cavern. The dragon shifts on its taloned feet and curls its neck from side to side. It swats its claws at the sword sticking from its chest. Thrashing its tail, the dragon circles, then rolls briefly onto its side. Hans watches, wide-eyed. Back on its feet, the dragon flicks its tail again, then drops to its belly. Its long neck flops to the ground, and it blinks one of its glowing eyes. Gasping, the beast rolls onto its pointy back and lies motionless on the cavern floor. Hans takes deep breaths and eyes the dragon's still body. Outside the cave, Ludwig reclines against the rocky wall with his hands behind his head and his crossed legs stretched out.
Help!
Master!
What is it?
The dragon is killing!
Hans staggers out.
Are you sure that he's got just pretending?
Oh, I stake my life on it.
Well, we can't claim the reward without the creature's head, can we?
But there's more than that.
Nope. Don't give me the sword. If you want something done right, I say, do it yourself. Stand up, lad.
Ludwig sets off at a run and bangs his helmet again. Reacting to the impact, Hans's head jiggles from side to side. He waddles over to help Ludwig to his feet. Nighttime. In a forest, Ludwig approaches a stream on horseback as Hans follows on foot. The servant carries Ludwig's armor and pulls the bagged dragon head on a rope.
Oh, Hans, you must be tired. Rest here a while. Have a drink of water.
Oh, thank you, Master. You're very kind. But after you, sir.
No. A good commander always looks after his men first. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Hans sets down the armor, then hurries over to the stream. He lies down on his stomach and scoops up water with his hands. As Hans drinks, Ludwig dismounts slowly, draws his sword from its sheath, and creeps up behind Hans. A reflection in the water shows Ludwig raise the sword above his unsuspecting servant. Lightning flashes. In the storyteller Anna's cottage, the children jerk with fright. Outside, Wilhelm huddles in the rain, writing. He pulls his collar tight around his neck.
Is it too blood-curdling, children? Shall I stop?
We know it's only make-believe.
Please.
Go on. Very well. So, because he feared that someone might discover it was the servant and not the master who had slain the dragon, greedy Ludwig killed Hans and buried him under the apple tree.
Back in the story, Ludwig smooths a dirt mound by the stream.
While Ludwig went on to claim the reward and dwell in a fine castle, good Hans lay beneath the ground. Spring passed, and the earth's breast was warmed by summer's gentle touch.
An apple drops onto the grassy mound.
Autumn came, painting the leaves with rainbow colors.
Brown leaves stir in the breeze.
The north wind brought winter into the land, covering it with an icy blanket of purest white. And then it was spring again. Spring, the time of awakening. With the dragon gone, everyone felt safe again, and the countryside flourished. And so one fine day, a shepherd with his flock passed by the apple tree. Suddenly, he saw something at his feet. With a bit of carving, the shepherd thought, I could make a fine flute to play on and soothe my flock. Straight away, he took out his knife and began to whittle holes.
Sitting on the grassy bank, the teenage shepherd boy carves the foot-long bone. As his herd of sheep graze nearby, he makes a final twisting cut, then blows off the shavings and puts away his knife. He rises to his feet and holds the flute to his lips.
Oh, shepherd, listen to my tale. I sleep beneath a tree.
He gapes at the flute. Later in town, a king sits in a canopied throne near a tribunal of 7 purple-robed men. Ludwig approaches.
May I ask, Your Majesty, why my presence was requested here?
I have discovered a new musical instrument, which I thought might amuse you.
As ruler of half your kingdom, I would like to remind you that I simply loathe music.
As ruler of the other half, I suspect that you will change your mind.
Shepherd, will you play us a tune?
The shepherd boy stands.
Thank you so much. Some other time, perhaps.
Oh, King, pray listen to my tale. I sleep beneath the tree. My master Ludwig raised his sword and drove it into me. I'll never walk the earth again, or nor hear a bird, nor plant a seed. Till the man who slew me says he's sorry for the deed.
The king stares at Ludwig.
Well, Sir Ludwig.
Your Majesty, it was an accident. You see, my sword slipped, and poor Hans happened to be directly underneath.
Because it was poor Hans who slew the dragon, and not you, isn't that so?
Yes, he was holding the sword when it entered the beast.
The elegantly dressed Ludwig drops to his knees.
Mercy, Your Majesty, I didn't know what I was doing. Mercy, I beg of you.
The court will pass sentence.
Sitting at a long table, the seven bearded judges confer. Each wears a black flat-crowned hat and a silver medallion. One stands.
You have been found guilty of the crimes of greed, treachery, and murder. The penalty is...
Wait! Don't do anything hasty. I'm sorry I did it. Truly sorry. Really am.
The bone leaps out of the shepherd's hands and onto the cobblestone. Bone by bone, a skeleton takes form from the bottom up. A skull spins into view, then a fully clothed Hans materializes. The servant jerkily flexes his arms, then touches his face.
Well, wanna see that?
My boy, you are just in time to hear a sentence passed on an evil person.
Hans, don't let them kill me. If you'll overlook that one little incident, I was always a good master to you.
It's true, Your Majesty. He was a good master. Any bit of old clothing he couldn't use, he'd give it to me. And on a cool, bitter night, he let me sleep next to his nice, warm horse. And any scrap of food his dogs wouldn't eat, he'd let me have him. I implore you, Your Majesty, spare his life.
So be it. His life shall be spared.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Well, help me up, Crumpet Face.
Wait. I have not finished. You, Ludwig, shall spend the rest of your life as servant to Hans.
Oh, no!
Come here, my boy.
As Hans approaches the throne, the king draws his sword. Hans flinches and edges away, then kneels before the king.
Hans, hereafter to be known as Sir Hans, the Dragon Killer.
The shepherd beams at Hans. As a footman leads over a white horse with a gold-fringed saddle, Hans bashfully covers his mouth. He lifts his foot to mount the horse, but misses the high stirrup. Ludwig gets down on all fours. The chubby Hans steps up onto Ludwig's back and mounts the horse. As Hans looks around at the crowd and grins, Ludwig climbs stiffly to his feet. He holds his back with one hand and grips the horse's reins with the other. Hans smiles down at him.
Don't you worry, sir. I'll be just as good a master to you as you are to me.
Thank you,
Ludwig looks queasily at Hans, then leads the horse away. Hans waves to the townspeople. Back in Anna's cottage, the children smile and clap. Anna suddenly holds her chest, then smiles feebly.
No, it's getting late. You must go home. No, no arguments now. Off you go.
Bye, Auntie Anna.
Goodbye, my boy.
Bye, Auntie Anna.
Outside, Wilhelm gets up from the bench by the window and hides around a corner as the children exit. Back inside, a child hugs Anna.
Goodbye, my boy. Look after the girls now, won't you?
Goodbye.
Goodbye, my dear.
As the last child runs off, Wilhelm creeps forward. Inside, Anna sits by the open door and holds her chest once again. Mm. Her features tighten with pain. From outside, Wilhelm sees Anna rise shakily to her feet. He hesitates outside the door, then rushes to her side.
What is it? What's the matter?
Nothing. To pass.
He takes Anna's elbow and helps her over to a bed. As she sits, he grabs a pillow and places it behind her back.
I'll go and fetch a doctor. No, no. Get me a hot cup of tea.
Wilhelm closes the front door, takes a mug from the mantel, and fills it with tea, adding hot water from a kettle over the fire. Anna's hand drops from her chest and she breathes heavily. Wilhelm brings her the mug and she smiles.
And have some yourself. You're soaking wet.
Thank you.
As Anna sips, Wilhelm returns to the fire and fixes some tea for himself. The flames cast long shadows on the wall.
I told you to go away. What were you doing outside?
Listening.
Wilhelm takes his tea and returns to Anna.
You know, you shouldn't live here all alone.
I'm not alone. Death's been my companion for some time now.
You've many good years left.
I shall only regret leaving the children. But they'll remember me because of my stories, like their parents before them.
Those stories don't just belong to a few children. They belong to children all over the world. Now and forever after.
I like you, Wilhelm Grimm.
Enough to tell me some more stories.
But there are so many of them. There's one about a little boy that was no bigger than my thumb. Then there's the poor little girl whose face was always covered in cinders. And the other one whose skin was as white as snow.
Wilhelm takes paper from his writing box.
Would you like another cup of tea?
No. No, just the stories.
Now in Rheinberg, onlookers wave at a passing parade. A man in a cape rides by on a wagon that hauls a wine cask. A smiling young man frolics by. On his back, he wears a cone-shaped basket brimming with vines. Behind him, a wagon follows, full of musicians, then ranks of men and women in folk costume. At the pier, Jacob paces as passengers board the boat. In Anna's cottage, Wilhelm takes dictation.
When she saw the blind prince, she wept for joy. Two of her tears fell into his eyes, and suddenly he was able to see.
Wilhelm moves his pen quickly across the page. He looks up.
The boat. Must be getting late. I really must go. How can I ever thank you?
You have. You have.
As Jacob waits alone at the pier, Wilhelm hops across the stream. He trips on a rock and pages drop out of his writing box into the water. As Wilhelm checks his pocket for Anna's stories, the stack of manuscript pages floats away. Wilhelm struggles to his feet and continues on. Unnoticed, the stack of manuscript pages drifts further downstream. In the town square, the couples in folk costume perform a lively polka-like dance. Smiling revelers look on. On a raised platform decorated with bushy green garlands, a band leader conducts with a baton covered in ribbons. On a side street, Wilhelm races between two buildings, then makes his way through a crowd of people swaying to the music. As he runs past the costume dancers, a man in a blue smock and felt hat waves dismissively at him, then pulls a nearby woman into a dance. At the waterfront, Wilhelm stops short as he sees the distant boat steaming down the river. He runs onto the short pier where Jacob leans against the railing. The two brothers stand solemnly back to back. Wilhelm slowly turns to Jacob.
Jacob,
the boat waited 10 minutes. I went to the church.
I lost all track of time.
They told me you'd left over an hour ago.
That's true, I did. Jacob, listen. I found this wonderful old woman. The stories she tells. Well, if only you could have seen the happy faces of those children. Well, with their eyes wide and their souls warm. Look, these are pure gold. You can't realize how valuable they are.
We have worked over 6 months on the Duke's family history. Unless it's delivered tomorrow, we won't be paid. That's how valuable they are.
Well, we'll get there somehow. Well, we can hire horses. Or a coach. Well, we might even be able to catch them on the next land.
Jacob looks at the writing box under Wilhelm's arm and notices the open end is facing down.
What's the matter?
Where is it? Where's the manuscript?
Jacob holds out the now empty box.
I don't know. I must have... I slipped while crossing the river.
You fool! 6 months! Thrown away. Our whole career ruined. But these are safe.
He grabs Anna's stories.
Jacob, forgive me.
Ask the Duke to forgive you. You've always an explanation ready. Go and explain to the Duke. But this time it's up to you. Because I won't be there, I'm not going back.
What? But But where will you go?
Wherever I can find work, by myself. I can't work any longer with you. You ruin everything you touch.
Jacob turns away, his fingers clenching the pages of stories.
I know you don't mean it. You're very angry, and you've every right to be, but... well, we need you. All of us.
I've got needs of my own. A wife, a home, and time to do work that's important. I never have anything as long as I'm tied to you.
He flings down the pages.
Jake!
I'm sorry, Wilhelm. But I'm much more sorry for your family. With nothing to live on but dreams.
Holding his carpet bag, Jacob walks off. Wilhelm stares after his brother, watching him head toward the town square. In the distance, jubilant villagers pass on the street. Wilhelm crouches down on one knee, staring at the discarded pages, and pulls his jacket lapels up around his neck. He gingerly picks up the papers. Later, in the Duke's Grand Hall, Wilhelm stands before the pacing nobleman. Gruber stands nearby.
It's not enough to lose the manuscript. Not enough to rob me of my gift to the king. Here's my portrait. Stamp on it. Wipe your boots on my face. You and your illustrious brother. You are very pleased to see me made ridiculous.
No, sir. And you mustn't blame my brother. I'm entirely responsible.
Hear that? He's a man of honor, our minstrel. Takes full responsibility for the crime.
Brings to mind the old saying, honor among thieves.
What shall I send to the King of Prussia instead? A pretty parcel full of frogs and dogs and hags and dragons?
Your Grace, may I please be excused?
Full responsibility you take and full punishment. To begin, you get no money.
I expect none, sir.
Well, what do you expect? Answer.
Your Grace, I can't think.
I could punish you in a way you couldn't even imagine. Fortunately for you, I'm a civilized man.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Listen to him. Detect a note of sarcasm.
Unmistakably, sir.
Wilhelm wavers on his feet.
It wasn't meant to be.
For 6 months, I've given you a house rent-free. You owe me that rent, and you'll pay it.
I'll try, Your Grace.
You will not try. You'll pay. I'll give you 3 days.
3 days?
If not, you'll be evicted and sent to debtor's prison.
The Duke flicks his hand and Gruber follows him out. Wilhelm staggers forward.
Your Grace, I can't. It's impossible. Not in 3 days. Please wait, Your Grace.
His hand covering his mouth, Wilhelm leaves the hall through an ornate archway. Two red-suited footmen watch as he uses the wall for support on his way out. Outside the Grand Hall, Wilhelm leans weakly against the wall, then faints at the head of a staircase. He tumbles down the steps. A guard races down after him and rolls him over, lifting his head off the floor. Later, at Wilhelm's house, Dorothea paces in the front hall. She turns to a man descending the stairs.
How is he, Doctor? Is he better?
I can't truthfully say he's better. I can only say he's no worse.
No, not just words, Doctor. I want to know the truth.
In the morning, we shall all know. He's been ill before.
Not this ill. Never for such a long time.
Come.
Nearby, Stossel confers with Greta.
Such a fool he is. So little strength. And he throws it away, chasing daydreams.
My father is not a fool.
Oh, no, darling. What Mr. Stossel means is that it's foolish for your father to give so much of himself, to be so unselfish.
That's what I mean. The whole world should be made of such foolishness.
It's late. It's time for bed. Greta, would you?
Oh, of course.
Greta leads the children out.
Good night.
Come along, children.
Children don't understand. We scold most the ones we love best.
Wilhelm's son pauses on the stairs.
Mama, will it help if we pray for Papa?
Yes, my darling.
The boy goes upstairs. Dorothea answers the front door. It's Gruber, dressed in a top hat and cape with a soldier behind him.
Mr. Gruber? Come in.
The gaunt elderly man enters and removes his hat.
I bring a communication from the Duke regarding your husband.
That's very thoughtful of His Grace.
Mrs. Grimm, the communication is an order to evict your husband and his family from this house.
Evict? A man who may never see tomorrow?
You can't do that.
I must, unless he's able to pay 6 months' rent.
He's not able to sit up, to raise his head.
The Duke has given me orders.
May I give you an order, Mr. Gruber?
Wilhelm's brother arrives.
Jacob.
Tell His Benevolent Highness he will get his money.
Darling.
Greta and Jacob embrace.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here.
May I ask when the Duke will receive the money?
As soon as I sell my library.
Sold. You'll get your money in the morning, Gruber.
Or would you prefer to put me in debtor's prison?
Now, please understand. I'm only obeying the Duke's order.
We do understand. If there were no Duke, there would be no Gruber.
Exactly. If there were no dogs, there would be no fleas. This way.
Stossel bumps Gruber with his belly and shows him out. Now in Wilhelm's bedroom.
Jacob, don't go.
I'm here.
Please, come back, Jacob.
I'm right here, Wilhelm.
Come back. Forgive me.
You've got to listen. Can you hear me?
Forgive me.
I won't go away. When you're well, we start working again.
Forgive me.
Just as before. I promise you. Just get well, Wilhelm.
The doctor enters. Jacob sits at Wilhelm's bedside, his arms resting on his brother's. The doctor taps Jacob, who stands aside. The physician holds Wilhelm's wrist, pulls out a pocket watch, and checks the delirious man's pulse. He looks resignedly at his patient, then motions Jacob toward the door with a solemn nod of his head. Retrieving his satchel, the doctor walks out. Jacob starts to follow, then stops, his attention drawn back toward Wilhelm.
It's gone. The manuscript. I'll find it.
Jacob leaves, closing the door behind him. Wilhelm's head shifts groggily from side to side, his eyes shut. At the sheer curtain window, a giant bearded face peers in and fills the frame. The giant taps on the glass.
Jacob? Dorothea? Who is it?
The window opens with a nudge of the giant's hands.
Is this the residence of Wilhelm Grimm?
Wilhelm opens his eyes.
I'm Wilhelm Grimm. Who are you?
I'm a giant.
Don't be absurd. There are no giants.
The giant shakes his head and looks down.
He's a lot sicker than we thought.
We? Who's we?
Some friends of mine.
Go away. I'm dying. Everybody knows it.
You stop that. My friends are pulling at my trouser leg. They want to see you.
Don't want to see anybody. Tired. Very tired.
Easy, you overgrown ox! That's him?
Please, go away.
A man with a floor-length beard enters, then a fair young woman, then a dwarf.
We'll be quiet now. He says he's dying. We must be respectful.
Why? Huh? What, is he respectful to us?
Please leave me alone.
You see? No respect at all. He's mean and selfish.
You're a nasty little man.
Nasty little man. I am only nasty to them what's nasty to me. And nobody is nasty to me until I'm nasty to them first. And that includes everybody.
A thumb-sized man hops on the sill.
He thinks he's clever because he can spin gold out of straw.
Can he really do that?
Stop talking about me when people talk about me. My beard itches and I can't stand an itchy beard.
He has quite a temper, hasn't he?
Yes, and he really enjoys it.
Why, you little pipsqueak, I could crush you under my foot. What is your name anyway?
I don't know. What is my name?
How should I know?
You see? How should I know? He doesn't care whether we live or die. All he's interested in is himself, and anybody who's only interested in himself is not interested in anybody else, too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What he means, Mr. Grimm, is that our lives depend on you. If you die, we'll never be born.
We will never be born.
The fair-skinned woman eyes her companions.
Oh, now stop that. You promised if I brought you along, you wouldn't cry.
You're very sentimental, Mr. Grimm.
But I'm so tired. I have no more ice left in me.
Well, if you're gonna die, the least you can do is give us names.
Please, Mr. Grimm, would you?
Without names, we're nobodies.
We're nothings.
Please. Give us names.
A queen bee hovers over a crowned frog and the tiny man.
Would that be asking too much, Mr. Grimm?
Well, since you're no bigger than my thumb, we'll call you Tom Thumb.
Tom Thumb? Tom Thumb! Hooray, I got a name! Tom Thumb!
Tom does a backflip. A girl with a soot-covered face taps Wilhelm's arm.
Your face is dirty.
It's from cinders.
Then you should be called Cinderella.
Cinderella? Oh, I like that very much, Mr. Grimm. Thank you.
The fair-skinned woman smiles.
And I?
You're white as snow. You're Snow White.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Grimm.
Thank you, Mr. Grimm.
A girl and boy wave.
Hansel.
Hansel.
Gretel.
Gretel.
Mr. Grimm.
A girl in a red cloak.
This is easy. You're Little Red Riding Hood.
Thank you, Mr. Grimm.
But what about me? You forgot about me?
Do not get a name.
Rumpel, Stilts, Kin.
What? Well, that's ridiculous. What, who ever heard of such a name? Rumpel, well, what does it mean anyway?
I can't see you.
All things die differently, Mr. Grimm. We die like dreams, fade into forgetfulness.
No.
The characters start to fade.
Don't. You mustn't.
We haven't much more time. When you reach your last heartbeat, we reach ours.
But it isn't fair. Why must this be on my conscience?
Say goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Grimm.
Goodbye. And thank you, Mr. Grimm.
All but the giant turn to leave. Their figures slowly disappear.
Come back.
Didn't you forget something?
Rumpelstiltskin reappears briefly.
Bye.
Tell them to come back. Tell them.
Only you can call them back. Only you.
Wait.
Only you.
The giant fades away.
Don't leave me.
Only you.
Where are you? Where have you gone?
Wilhelm staggers to the windowsill, then collapses. In the sitting room, Dorothea covers her mouth in fright. She dashes upstairs, followed by Jacob and the others.
Here!
The doctor follows them to Wilhelm's room. Jacob stops Dorothea at the door.
Don't go in, I'll go.
Jacob, I've got to. Please let me.
She goes inside and finds Wilhelm on the floor, his outstretched arm leaned up on a wooden chest. Jacob rushes forward and turns Wilhelm over. Dorothea strokes Wilhelm's cheek.
It's gone. The fever's gone.
What's this?
Jacob picks up a piece of paper near Wilhelm's hand.
Once upon a...
His mouth lifts into a smile.
Once upon a time, there was a tiny little boy. His name was Tom Thumb.
Dorothea smiles as she cradles Wilhelm in her arms. Daytime. Jacob and Greta stroll in the park.
Of course it's difficult, but by his own admission, that you kiss him.
civilized man. And if we go on paying our rent, he will graciously permit us to go on living in our house. Of course, he's raised the rent, but...
Well, that has a strange sound to it. As though you plan to go on living there, too.
Jacob looks at Greta, then down at the hat in his hands.
When my brother was ill, I made him a promise that I would stay and work with him.
You also made a promise to me.
They are very different. One is, you might call it a duty, but it's much more.
The other much less?
No, darling. But I have only so much money, and the family has to be taken care of.
But it's his family, Jacob, not yours.
He's my brother.
Does that give him a claim on your whole life? I know he needs you, but so do I. Oh, it's humiliating to beg. But I don't care. With you, I have no pride.
She stares imploringly at Jacob, her arms by her sides. Jacob steps closer.
If only you'd wait a while.
How long is a while? A month? A year?
I don't know.
Forever?
Jacob cradles Greta's cheek. They stare into each other's eyes.
Greta, I love you.
You love me, and I love you, and there's nothing more to say, is there?
Jacob's hand slowly falls away.
Well, there's nothing to be gained by tormenting each other. I'm going home.
Wait, I'll take you.
Not my aunt's home. My home. In Berlin. Goodbye, Jacob.
As Jacob watches, Greta runs off down a leaf-strewn path. As her figure grows smaller in the distance, he turns away. Later, at the Grimm house, Wilhelm reads in the sitting room. Dorothea puts down her sewing.
Jacob, where have you been? Have you had supper?
I wasn't hungry. I felt like walking.
He pulls a bouquet from behind his back and presents it to Dorothea, then hands a note to Wilhelm.
This is for you. Your flower vendor drives a hard bargain. Still, it's quite a good story. It's about a tailor who kills 7 with one blow. 7 flies, that is. Townspeople misunderstand, and they are amazed.
So am I. I thought that fairy tales were just a waste of time.
Yes, honey. It's true, I did feel that way.
How do you feel about Greta Heinrich?
Miss Heinrich and I have reached an understanding.
I know. She came to say goodbye. She was crying.
Goodbyes are sentimental occasions for women. In fact, sentiment often blinds them to practical matters.
Uh-huh. Such as?
I need Wilhelm to complete my work. He needs my help to complete his stories.
Wilhelm gazes at his brother.
We'll start first thing in the morning. Good night.
As Jacob strides into the hall, Dorothea watches him go. On the stairs, he meets Wilhelm's son.
What are you doing here?
We want a story. Papa,
not
can
tonight.
We...
Papa's too tired.
Oh, just one. Just a little teeny weeny
no,
one.
No, you heard your mother. Come along.
Oh, we'll never come get come along. A story.
Jacob herds the children to their room.
Come along. And no complaining. And don't annoy your father. He's been much too sick.
But he's better
Shh.
Now.
Into bed, I said.
The two children get under the covers. Jacob sits on one of the beds and smiles.
I will tell you a story.
You don't know any stories.
You're wrong. I just heard one today from the flower vendor.
Did you pay her? What did it cost you?
What did it cost me? Enough.
Later in the Grimm study, the two brothers sit at their writing desks, quill pens in hand. One after one, colorful book covers float into view. Over Wilhelm at his desk, Tom Thumb, Cinderella, Rumpelstiltskin, and Hansel and Gretel. Now over Jacob, book covers read Serbian Grammar and History of the German Language. Jacob rises to his feet and brings a page over to Wilhelm. Later, on a town corner, Wilhelm pays the flower vendor as Jacob writes. Two more books whisk forward, Queen Bee and Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. Later, in front of Stossel's bookshop, Wilhelm acts out a story as he reads to a crowd. A stiff wind ruffles a vendor's Christmas trees and more books appear. Rapunzel, The Tailor. Back in the grim study, the books Legal History and Myths and Legends zoom forward from Jacob at his desk. A book entitled Wisdom swoops over a scene of a classroom where young boys listen to an elderly teacher. Another book appears, Latin poems of the 10th and 11th century. Now in a drawing room, a man reads to four children as two more books appear, The Frog Prince and The Goose Girl. In the grim study, the two brothers smile side by side as more books appear, The Town Musicians and Sleeping Beauty. The bookshelves behind Jacob's desk are empty.
Wilhelm.
What is it? What's the matter?
The Duke, he's here. He's downstairs.
Well, what's the trouble? We paid the rent.
Maybe he's raising it again.
More likely throwing us out. Why, that miserable...
Don't keep him waiting. You know what a temper he's got.
As the three hurry downstairs, the Duke greets them with outstretched arms.
Jacob, my illustrious scholar, my gifted man of letters. I came here the moment I heard.
Heard what?
How are you?
I'm very much better, thank you.
I'm happy to present my distinguished protege, Jacob Grimm, and his brother, Mr. Dantino from Berlin.
The Dantino? I'll be very honored to meet you, sir.
How do you do, sir?
Have you met our friend Stossel?
We have been in communication. I know all about it.
All about what?
Silence.
Silence.
I've been commissioned by His Majesty Wilhelm III, King of Prussia.
A man of honor, courage, wisdom. A man I'm humbly grateful to. Continue.
To inform you, gentlemen, that you have been elected to membership in the Berlin Royal Academy.
Did you hear that?
Royal Academy!
You're surprised, huh? But not I. I want you to know I was the first to recognize the talent.
I know all about it.
I told him.
Oh. The induction ceremony will take place in Berlin. I present you now with your certificate of membership. Excuse me.
Wilhelm intercepts the scroll. Jacob helps him unroll it.
In recognition of the literary and scholarly excellence of the German grammar, Serbian grammar, legal antiquities, Grimm's law of consonants, Latin poetry. Is something wrong?
No, it's just that there's no mention of the fairy tales.
Fairy tales?
The two brothers gaze off sadly. Dorothea squeezes Wilhelm's arm.
Never mind, it's not important.
Fairy tales are ridiculous. Frogs and dogs and hags and dragons. Frogs and dogs and hags and dragons.
Now a steam engine speeds past autumn trees, pulling three passenger cars shaped like carriages. A man wearing a stovepipe hat works the engine's controls beside a rail worker. Inside one car, the Grimm brothers sit with Dorothea and the two children.
Uncle Jacob think what he's going to say.
Uncle Jacob knows what he's going to say. Members of the Academy, I'm deeply grateful for this honor, which, I regret to say, is an outrage.
Well, that's not very polite.
Nor sensible. It's your day. Stop resenting it. Look, whatever work we performed equally. Whatever honors are received, we should share equally.
You know, if you're not careful, you'll also share in my reputation, such as loony,
no,
mad...
No, you're nothing of the sort.
Neither is Jacob, I hope. We're being honored for your work, not mine. You were right about the fairy tales. They were a waste of time. Told quick reading, quickly forgotten.
Never mind that. It is an outrage. And in my speech, I'm going to tell them
Jacob,
that...
Just tell them that I'm your brother.
The engineer toggles the lever again, and steam shoots up from the train's whistle. A couple of passengers lean out of the car's windows. Later at the station, six men wearing black top hats and capes wait on the platform. A porter helps Dorothea off the train. As Wilhelm and Jacob follow, one of the caped men steps forward.
The Berlin Royal Academy welcomes you. And
suddenly, hundreds of children converge on the train platform from all directions, surrounding the caped officials and running toward the Grimms. the two brothers face the multitude as more and more children push forward. Greta stands among the children. She smiles and waves. Jacob nudges Wilhelm.
Just tell them I'm your brother.
Wilhelm beams at the eager children. Their bright faces fill the station. Wilhelm holds up his arms and scans the crowd.
Once upon a time, there were two brothers.
Yeah! Wilhelm and Jacob exchange a humble glance, then look out over the joyous children. In her red bonnet and cape, Greta smiles broadly. Words appear, and they lived happily ever after. As the picture fades to black, the words remain. The typewritten line rises to the middle of the screen. It grows dim and disappears.